The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Welcome to Webster Groves Health Radio. I'm your host, Matt Factor from Factor Physical Therapy. That's located in Webster Groves at the corner of Watson and Laclede Station Road in Yorkshire Village. And I'm here with my co-host, David Factor. On Webster Groves Health Radio, we discuss health-related issues along with improving our community. For today's show, we have part two of our interview with Dr. Pam Gronemeyer, who is the physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for a National Health Program Illinois, and board member of Missourians for Single Payer. Welcome again to the show, Dr. Pam.
Thank you for having me for this important topic.
Yeah, so thanks. So we're going to kind of pick up where we left off last show. So I was wondering, so what happens with these private insurance companies? I mean, if we make this transition to a single-payer program?
Well, I'm sure they'll transition to some other kind of insurance. I mean, there actually in H.R. 676, which is the House bill, there is a provision, and there may be an 1804, the Senate bill, provision to retrain some of the people who work in the healthcare, who work in, like, the people that answer the phones. I mean, probably the CEOs are going to have to get new jobs, but I think that we're going to need more people in healthcare anyway. If more people are able to obtain healthcare, we're going to need more healthcare providers. I mean, some people say we do or do not have, we're going to have a physician shortage, but we need, so many ancillary people. I mean, what we'd do is just get rid of the billing part of it.
Right. So basically billing would become more streamlined. So under a single payer program, it's a lot more efficient, right?
Right. You go in with your card. I mean, if you go to most of the, in Canada, they don't have a billing office. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you turn in your card, it goes through it's a government card. It goes through the card and the government didn't say what kind of health care you had. They're just going to make sure that it's paid for.
Now, right. I think I once heard a figure that just comparing it to our own Medicare and our private healthcare system, that the private healthcare pays about 30% on bureaucracy and billing, whereas Medicare is about 3%.
Yeah, that's what they estimate. Now, I think there was the ACA tried to reduce it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing is, what does insurance companies count as administrative costs? Right. I mean, I'm going to go off to a side, but I just became of Medicare age. And I will tell you that prior to the last 6 months, I have been hounded by insurance companies and agents trying to sell me Advantage plans. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot. I mean, somebody pays for those people to be on the phone. I mean, those people will. I mean, there are many other jobs. I mean, we have a lot of work in this country to do that we could find other jobs for.
So what's the difference between these Advantage plans and Medicare plans?
Well, the managed care plans were probably an effort by the Bush administration to try to privatize Medicare. I mean, Medicare is a program that's administered by the government, but what happened was they had these insurance companies get involved, and the insurance companies enroll patients, and they're supposed to be helping them manage their care. They have networks of physicians. They have a primary. They have a referral from your primary. They
So they require you to see your primary first, right?
Right. You have to go through your gatekeeper.
Okay.
And you have to, I mean, they have advantages to, like, they have formularies for their drugs. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you also get other perks. But they get paid 11% more than conventional Medicare. So, therefore, they're making money off of Medicare. And if anyone knows, I mean, about three years ago, that I think it was United cut 200 specialists out.
Wow.
Therefore, I mean.
It limits your options and your choices.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to wait longer to see your specialists, obviously, if there are 200 fewer of them.
Yeah, so typically, I think to help people understand what's really happening here is it's a private entity coming in saying, I want some government money, okay, and I'm going to take the lump sum. So let's say they give you $100 million. Now I only want to give out benefits $50 million so that I can keep the other $50 million. And so that's kind of how they end up structured. So they're plans that are created with carve-outs and cutouts, and then that harms people if you happen to get some of those things that are on the B column instead of in the A column.
Well, they recruit healthy people too. They don't want sick people. They want healthy people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're, and in reality, when we've looked at the Medicare Advantage plans where they're supposed to be managing our health care, their outcomes are no better. I mean, their outcomes are the same or worse than Medicare. So therefore, they're not, their management isn't really worth the money.
Yeah. So I think that that's another interesting thing that I think needs to be talked about is sometimes people hear hot button topics like, whether it's socialized healthcare or single-payer healthcare, or they say, well, we don't want to have healthcare like the Germans, or we don't want to have healthcare like, you know, and it ends up being this kind of jingoistic kind of talk back and forth. And what it ends up being is kind of a conversation of nonsense, because the U.S. has the worst outcomes in all of the developed world. And if people realize that we are paying way more money to be the worst, to be last place time and time again, which means you're sicker, your family's sicker, your neighborhood's sicker, right? I mean, they just don't seem to have that perspective kind of shown to them, maybe in the media, and they seem to be ignorant of it.
Well, that's why it's so important to educate. But if you look at how much money we spend and look at our survival, how long we live, I mean, we're high up on the top, but we're way down on the bottom for our life survival.
Right, so we're paying the most, but we're not living as long.
Well, plus the other thing that's frightening is the last few years is the first time the male white population over the age of 60, their life expectancy has gone down. Mm-hmm. I mean, so we're really not succeeding. I mean, I view the goal of healthcare is that you should make people healthy, have a life, you know, a lifestyle that they can enjoy. I mean, I think it's part of the fact that, you know, we're trying to ensure the well-being of our country, of our people. So therefore, making money is not the answer. Yeah.
And so basically, right now the majority of the country has these profit-centered, you know, healthcare. And when it's profit-centered, there's going to be ways in which they try to, you know, either push some extra cost onto you time and time again, or just go ahead and create situations where you're not going to be able to access the providers you need, or, you know, you're going to have lots of different inefficiencies introduced that get in your way of getting better.
Right. They make it more expensive for everybody, the employers, for everybody. I mean, so therefore, I mean, and like I said, we talked about before, administrative costs. Medicare functions on an administrative cost of about 3%. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, being a provider, I know that when we call Medicare or the patient calls Medicare, they get the same answer from Medicare. Unlike some of the insurance companies where I believe, and they bait the patient against the provider. They tell the patient we didn't bill it right. And then they tell us the patient didn't give us the right information. So it makes it adversarial. So it increases the time. Everybody gets mad at each other. And Medicare, I signed up for Medicare. It took me one, I went online and I was told a date where they would call me. He called me at the right time. I got my card and it was just like that. It was just like a snap.
So easy, streamlined. No problems.
Right.
So how will single-payer healthcare be funded?
Well, I mean, this is anathema to many, but clearly it's taxes. I mean, we're going to have, I mean, some sort of way to pay for it. Because it's not free, but it's a better product. It's where we all put in money together. I view it as being paid for by a payroll tax paid by the employer, a small tax paid by the employee. And that creates the Medicare Trust Fund. Now, some people believe it should be paid for by a progressive tax where you tax people who make more money more than you tax. But the problem is that, and you know what happens when you say taxes, raising the taxes in the United States. I mean, that is a way you could pay for it. And I mean, progressive tax would be a way. Now, there's another way some people suggest a Robin Hood tax, where you put a tax on financial transactions that would also secure you some money. But anyway, it's going to have to be. But the idea, and that's what somehow didn't come out totally during the election last time, was that the amount you're paying in a tax is less than what your employer is paying and less than what you're paying. Plus, I mean, if it's less, your employer then really can decide that you need a raise rather than just paying for your health care each year.
Right. Mm-hmm. So basically, the way people need to understand it is you're going to pay less and you're going to get more ultimately. But you have to look at the net gain, right? So if people are sitting here saying, well, if you just say tax, I refuse to pay one dime in tax. But if you look at it on the other side, you're going to pay $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in insurance to, let's say, one of the other big private insurance companies. Count that as your tax now, right? So you might as well go ahead and shift it over and make sure that you expand your benefits.
Well, it's like a no-brainer. I mean, you should be, we should. Plus, the fact is that as the system goes along, it's going to get increasingly more expensive. We don't even know what the bottom line is. I mean, Gerald Friedman, a professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, estimates it could consume ultimately like all of our money because it keeps going up. And even though the ACA did help control costs, and actually Medicare has kept costs down. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and the outcomes are very good.
So there's something interesting, too, and I don't know if you know this aspect of it, is if the plan shifts to a single-payer plan, then what the hospitals will be given is like maybe a lump sum of money, and they'll have to operate within that lump sum of money. Instead of them pricing and charging everybody $60, $70 for a Band-Aid every time you go to the hospital, there won't be that, extreme cost. They're going to be in charge of proving that they're fiscally responsible. They'll be given their lump sum and they'll have to operate within that lump sum. They'll have to be purely not for profits instead of being run, for profit.
Well, and even the not for profits are for profit.
Right.
I mean, so the thing is that, but basically, if you think about it too, the costs of the vendors will have to go down. I mean, because they're not going to be able to, afford the, being a physician, the vendors make off like bandits too. I mean, because basically every year, we're at Medicare. I have a fee schedule every year where I accept the fees that Medicare pays for me to look at a breast biopsy, to look at a colon resection. But vendors raise their rates every year. I mean, I'll get a 5% increase. It's like, where's that 5% going to come from? I mean, and the hospitals will get, that's really part of the Canadian system is they get a lump sum. And sometimes the hospitals there's so much competition and hospitals don't look like hospitals anymore, I don't think. Sometimes they look more like motels.
Right, right. No, that's interesting. And I think, will people, it sounds like people will get to choose their own doctor then. They'll have more freedom under a single payer system. So if we're freedom based in America, then people should be, gung ho about switching to this type of a program.
Medicare, you pick your doctor. You don't know. The federal government doesn't say you have to go to this doctor. You pick your doctor. And it's publicly funded, privately delivered. And doctors are paid instead of being paid by multiple payers like United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We get a Medicare check from the federal government. And it's all, it's spelled out every year what the fee schedule is. I mean, what everything costs. I mean, it's just much more. I mean, if you want to think economically or budget-wise, it's a much smarter way to do this.
Okay, yeah. And would a single-payer system, is it sustainable? Right now we have the baby boomers aging population. Some people are worried that they'll be bankrupting our health system.
Oh, I don't think we'll bankrupt. I'm a baby boomer. Right? I don't think we'll bankrupt our system. I mean, but you're right. But see, I think that's sort of a plot in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a plot to try to turn the millennial or turn people against the older people because they think we're only worried about consuming for ourselves and not worried about other people. But I'll tell you, a lot of the single payer movement is supported and worked, and the activists come out of the baby boomers. And we don't want it just for ourselves. We want to make sure it's good for our children, our grandchildren, because we know Medicare works. I mean, Medicare has worked. It's not been challenged. I mean, the problem with the ACA, it kept getting challenged by the federal government and by the Supreme Court. Medicare has not been challenged and still exists. I mean, they've extended the life of the Medicare trust fund. So, I think we just need to be smart and we need to listen and not be so afraid of that we're going to take, I mean, everybody can't be watching everybody else and worrying they're getting more than I'm getting. Right. We need to be in it together.
That makes sense. I just wanted to remind our listeners that they're listening to Webster Groves Health Radio on KWRH LP with Matt Factor and David Factor of Factor Physical Therapy. And our guest is Dr. Pam Gronemeyer, physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, Illinois, and a board member of Missourians for Single Payer.
So will physicians' workloads change as a result of the change?
Oh, I don't think the workloads will change. I mean, we're producing a large number of doctors. We have actually physician extenders now and nurse practitioners and
physician's
assistants, right? So, I mean, the thing is that, and I know that's also a fear they try to create that we're going to have a shortage, but I think, you know, I think we'll rise to the occasion. I mean, the beauty of Medicare for Not, Enhanced Medicare for All, was they did a study in 2010, and like over 50% of the primary care, of the physicians who take care of primary needs, like general surgeons, internists, family practice, were all like 60% in favor of single payer. And I mean, the psychiatrists were even higher than that. Now, the only problem is some of the specialists weren't on board. But those are some of the specialists that probably need to come to reality.
Well, I think that I've heard the argument where some specialists have an extremely rich payer mix, right? So some of them might have just a few negotiated contracts with some private payers where they're making maybe an extra 10% above what other people are making or something like that. And I've heard some physicians say, well, I don't want to give that up. But you're gaining a lot more and the entire population is gaining a lot more. And that percentage of physicians, I think, is in the minority.
Well, it's true. I mean, but that people want to get richer, maybe. But do you go into healthcare to get, I mean, you know, I view healthcare, my job as a physician is, you know, it's my life choice. And it's, why did I go into it? Did I go into it to make $1 million? I mean, you know, a lot of times you could go into the financial industry and make a lot more money than you could be in a physician. And it's a lot of work. You have a lot of responsibility. But you also feel like you're doing a service. And I think that many, I mean, I've seen a lot of young physicians. And many young physicians really do believe in single payer. I mean, it's probably, you know, I mean, there are a lot of the students for National Health Program who are part of PNHP, the student program, activists. There are a lot of young activists who believe that, you know, the only problem is that we're going to have to figure out about paying for medical school. Because medical school now, what happens is the kids get out with $200,000 worth of loans. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so therefore, they're picking specialties that may net them more money. So we're going to have to figure out some way to equalize, you know, because medical school is really outrageous.
Right, right.
Will research into medical breakthroughs or new medications be hindered by a public single-payer system?
Oh, I don't think we're going to start thinking. Yeah. I mean, I think the United States, I mean, I think that we've always prided ourselves, and I don't think you're going to keep scientists down in the United States. They're not going to, I mean, Jonas Salk gave up the polio vaccine for, he created it and he gave it up for, he donated it because it belonged to everybody. I don't think that everybody is just driven by the dollar.
Well, most of our research is done by public institutions already, so.
A lot of it's funded by the, right, a lot of it's funded by the federal government.
So that's kind of an unfounded fear that people are afraid that there wouldn't be medical breakthroughs if it changed or something like that.
Well, that's how you control people, by fear. I mean, so there, that's why the getting the word out, we need to educate, you know, and when you go to the grocery store, if somebody's in line and they see your, you know, I have bags that say Medicare for All, so to start people, you know, why is this person? So therefore, you need to just educate, because I mean, there's been so much false news about, false media about what really single payer is. I mean, you know that. I mean, we've even seen some people, Donald Trump even said that Scottish healthcare was good in its single payer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting, and like, so a big thing is sometimes workman's comp. So that kind of thing will change, right? So things like that will change. Malpractice costs, how will those change?
Workman's comp will just be covered in single payer, and I mean malpractice. I mean, part of the burden of malpractice is you have to pay for the malpractice has to cover the excessive health costs because of the malpractice. But that would all be part. I mean, in Canada, the malpractice premiums are much less than they are in the United States.
So it's kind of like a double fee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A double fee. You're right. And we're paying the doctors are paying it. I mean, and the theory is that, I mean, the thing about malpractice, the majority of malpractice claims today are probably pretty legitimate. I mean, you know, we've always blamed the litigation for, driving up costs, but that's probably not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What happens to those who currently, or, you know, sometimes people say, well, are we going to be losing jobs? Right. And so I think we kind of touched on this at the first show, but what happens to some of these people? I guess, I mean, I don't know if people are very concerned about the person who's calling, who they're calling, you know, on the line, who's denying them benefits. But what happens to those people? Where do they go? Do they go into the single payer system, or do they stay at their current jobs? Or
I would imagine that there are, like I said, in HR 676, there's a retraining program, mm-hmm. and I mean, we're going to still need people to handle calling and signing up. I mean, some coordination of care. So therefore, I mean, and then plus if you expand the number of people, I mean, right now, how many, 28 million people are uninsured? If you expand the market to include everybody, you're going to need more healthcare providers. You're going to need more blood drawers. You're going to need more laboratory tech. You're going to need everything. So, I mean, I think that that's a false fear too, that it's just created to scare people.
Mm-hmm. Is there support for single payer in Congress?
Well, there is support in Congress. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we're up to 117, I can't remember, co-sponsors of HR 676. And mm-hmm. this is the first time when Bernie Sanders introduced his Senate Bill 1804 last year that we have Senate sponsors. Huh. So, I mean, realistically, but I really believe that Bernie Sanders and his campaign for single, mm-hmm. In the last election started getting the word out, and people are hearing more and more. And plus, he's had multiple town halls about it, where if people just need to listen to those town halls.
Yeah, yeah. So how can we prevent some of the mistakes of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, as other people know it as?
Well, the Affordable Care Act, part of the problem was it didn't expand it to everybody. I mean, with the fact that many states chose not to do the Medicaid expansion, even though that money was being provided primarily by the federal government, and even though the hospital associations in the states where it wasn't expanded wanted them to expand it. I mean, so therefore left off a lot of people in those states for getting Medicaid.
So was that just a political move, do you think? Or was there something else behind it?
I think it was probably a political move because they didn't want to pretend like they were relying on the federal government.
Yeah, they didn't want to pretend like anything was going to work, right?
Well, they were creating something that would fail. I mean, they were creating something that would still keep people off of health insurance.
So that's interesting. So what about adding a public option or a Medicare buy-in or something like that? Is that even appealing?
The problem with the Medicare option is the fact that you're just creating another system. And first of all, we don't know how much it would cost. Second of all, I mean, it's going to be another thing you'd have. I mean, we're not going to be getting rid of any of the insurance companies. I mean, the theory is, I guess, if it was so good, ultimately everybody would go into the Medicare option. But it's, you know, we don't know how much it would cost. We don't know, it still doesn't decrease the administrative costs, and it really isn't. I mean, we should just bite the bullet. That's what we did in the 60s. I mean, it took 2 months for people to be signed up for Medicare because they all had Social Security cards. I mean, why, you know, we really need to dream and believe that something can happen, because if we don't dream and believe it can happen, it won't happen.
So the public option would really just complicate things instead of simplifying them.
I think it would complicate things. I don't think it would really be an answer.
Now, are there any things people can do right now in order to take another step towards a single-payer environment?
Okay, I recommend everybody going to the Physicians for National Health Program website and looking at all the resources that are available. I mean, the PNHP is an excellent source of information about single payer. It has articles, it has guidelines, it has everything. And most states have single payer action groups, like Missourians for Single Payer. We have a Physicians for National Health program in both Illinois, branch in both Missouri and Illinois. We need to learn about it. There are many places you can go on the web and just type in single payer, or go on YouTube and find out what's there. Listen to the town halls. Get on, get active. I mean, we have rallies. I mean, right now there are many people that are signing petitions through the Healthcare Now group. That's another group, Healthcare Now. We're supporting Bernie's 1804, trying to get their senators to sign on board. We've gotten in Illinois trying to get Senator Durbin and Senator Duckworth on board. But, I mean, we need to keep pushing, because we need to not let them say there's not interest in it. Mm-hmm. We need to prove there is an interest and that we're going to win.
All right. I would like to thank Dr. Pamela Gronemeyer, who is a physician at SEMC Pathology, co-president of Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, Illinois, and board member of Missourians for Single Payer. And we'd like to thank our listeners for joining us for part two of Webster Groves Health Radio on Single Payer. Join us for upcoming shows on Wednesdays at 9:30 a.m. and Thursdays at 2:30 p.m.